Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm La.
So, what's new, Lyle?
I actually do have more news.
Oh, do you? Now, I was just giving Lyle a little bit of crap before the episode for the news last week. Pre-editing, when we recorded the show, it was information about Lyle's new mic, Lyle's new pair of pants, Lyle's medical scare, my Christmas, Wayne's Christmas, and Lyle's new book dilemma. And when Lyle sent in his editing cuts, they were to cut out my and Wayne's Christmas, leaving us with Lyle's new mic, Lyle's new pants, Lyle's medical condition, and Lyle's new book. like a slice of life, but it's more like a chunk of life.
Why have a piece of cake when you can have all of it?
just gotta do what the listeners want.
You know, it's but not like
your news was like your news was I went to an onsen, which is the equivalent of saying, oh, over the holidays I had a bath.
Exactly. I was just about to say it. It's like not like I was bringing something amazing to the podcast, but I thought it was pretty funny though.
I think
Wayne was having a bath outside.
This is true.
Wait, Wayne's news was lasagna.
Yeah, he ate lasagna.
Exactly, exactly.
That's huge. Come on, if you're going to talk about cancer or lasagna, what do you choose?
No, hold on, lasagna. There wasn't even a recipe involved. It was just like, I had lasagna.
Oh. Hey, how did it somehow jump onto me when I wasn't the one complaining about having my story cut?
I love how...
Wayne's story. That really sucked.
I love how this trio works.
Well.
And then after all that, I don't actually have anything to give this week.
Oh. The only thing I had to give was crap.
Started reading First King of Shannara.
Oh, you went with that one then. Cool.
Yeah. I actually started the D&D Giant one, but I decided to switch.
Ah, it was crap?
Yeah, it wasn't great. Mm.
I think Lyle was trying to be diplomatic about it.
Sorry.
But it, you know, the Terry Brooks, it's quite an adjustment after you read like Martin, George R. R. Martin.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a shift.
How so?
Well, it's kind of like 1970s, 80s era fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Game of Thrones, kind of pretty raw.
Mm, yeah.
And actually, First King came up same year as a Game of Thrones.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Wayne was going, oh, maybe I guess Terry Brooks hadn't seen that because it's a big game changer. And I was like, well, I think he would still kind of stay with the tone of some of the Shannara. It's not like
suddenly Shannara just gets really dark.
Jeez.
He just killed off the whole family. This is a prequel. How are the Shannaras in the next books? Yeah, so it's okay. I'm enjoying.
Yeah, I read the first one, Sword of Shannara, but I never got past that.
Yeah, same. Hmm. And to be honest, I don't even remember the sword.
Mm-hmm. Ditto.
Or Shannara.
I'd be like, I remember like there's trolls in it, and that there's some sort of it's some sort of post-apocalyptic world.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Terry Brooks has started to develop that a little bit more. He's writing other series, and they all connect.
Hmm. Good on him, I guess.
Over the past 2 weeks, the time off, I've actually run three more games of Dungeon World over Skype.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I like the system. Although, I will agree with you more, Chris, that it's weird. Like, if you go into the game with a lot of stuff planned out, kind of like for like a full map for a dungeon crawl,
mm-hmm.
I don't really think the game works that well.
Okay.
Like... So it's weird, like, you need to have blanks in your prep so that the player-generated information can be plugged in there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one game I ran where the players were going to go delve into this tower and fight an ice witch, and most of it was spent outside getting to the tower.
Yeah.
And so I kind of ran them like con games, like 4-hour slots, and so by the time they got into the tower, there was only about an hour left, and... Through clever thinking, they just kind of like bypass a lot of stuff. And so I cut a lot of stuff from the map and just said, kind of here you are at the, essentially what became, was like the boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second game I ran, I just tried to do kind of like a pure dungeon crawl where they were kind of like the game I ran for you, Tom, and you, Drew, Chris.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, room after room. And it felt like it didn't work because everything was mapped out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew kind of where everything was and how enemies would get to those rooms. And I said, there's no way that they could.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came time to make like those hard moves or like push the fiction forward, I had kind of hamstring myself by saying, no, there's kind of no way that anything could get there. And I found it a lot harder to kind of throw wrenches at the players where when there were all those empty spaces, it was a lot easier to just say, okay, yeah, and this happens because it needs to happen to drive the story forward.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, actually, after we did the podcast on it, I felt a little bit guilty because I was a bit rough on it, and I reread the rules. I still don't like the rules for the magic very much, but I was looking, and the thief class looks really interesting, or the rogue class, I think. So I wouldn't mind giving another chance with another type of character. Maybe just the magic rules in me don't fit well, but yeah.
You know, the authors did just come out with a playtest barbarian. So.
Ooh, I do like me some barbarian.
Yeah. So yeah, I still think it's a pretty good game, and. Yeah, just more examples under my belt as GM.
Cool.
No more news?
No.
That was my big game-related stuff.
Well, I'd probably get caught anyway.
Oh, jeez.
What?
All right, well, for episode 99, we're going to debut a new series called GM Tools. So we're looking at different things game masters can do, and like specifically like tools, not like here's historical references that might make an interesting story, but the actual tools you'd use to make up your story.
So the first episode is going to be pens. No?
Stay tuned for the exciting sequel, Notebook. Took a bad joke and went one step further. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Like, technically you added to it, but you just added words.
And none of them were good.
So, Chris, what are we going to kick off GM Tools with? What's the first topic?
So we're starting off with set pieces, vignettes, and box text. Set pieces it's a film term, and it comes from a scene that's bigger than the rest of the surrounding movie. It needs extra planning, extra preparation, and usually a lot more expense. It's also used to mean like a comedic or a dramatic high point, maybe a transition or a resolution in the plot. And a good example of this, one that we might be looking at later, is the trench run from the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, chronologically the first Star Wars movie. So this is a little bit tough to translate into a game because, you know, in games we don't really have the expense of movies or, you know, like trailers to plan out for our set pieces. But oftentimes we'll have kind of scenes that we want to happen in the game, or we have some idea for something that would be a really good high point, maybe like the climax battle or some way to end up the season of whatever campaign I'm running. And we might kind of want to plan, put a little bit more into that scene. So we're going to be taking a look at some ways to do that.
What's a vignette?
Oh, yeah, it'd be helpful too. And then vignettes are quite similar to set pieces. They're kind of small, dramatic or important scenes in a movie. And they're often a bit more self-contained. An example is like the Royale with Cheese conversation from Pulp Fiction. In film parlance, the difference is really, often about cost and which one is exciting enough to make it into the trailer. Set pieces are usually more action filled, so they make it in. Vignettes usually aren't. But that, again, that doesn't really translate into game well. So for this episode, we're going to be defining vignettes as more, like character development or things where you put in background story. Some examples might be like a dream sequences or flashbacks, flash forwards, or maybe like a background vignette or something like that.
Well, I think what you said, thinking about it now, the fact that set pieces, I guess, are generally more action-packed than vignettes is also another decent way to differentiate them for a game.
Yeah.
You know, like as you said, a set piece would probably be like a climactic battle that kind of ends the season or ends the campaign or at least resolves that major plot thread, where a vignette, I tend to think it would be usually more like social interaction. So it's still kind of important. And as you said, it gives you background or character development, but there's not going to be a lot of action in that scene.
Yeah, I think you defined it well before the podcast, Wayne, in saying that a set piece would drive the plot forward, whereas a vignette drives the character development.
Oh, yeah, and since we're going to be looking at sort of the Star Wars trilogy to pull out examples for this episode, I had thought a decent example of a vignette for game terms was the scene in the Mos Eisley cantina between Greedo and Han Solo. Like, it gives background information, it kind of further develops that character, and it's important to tell us what kind of character he is, and I guess there's like a tiny bit of action in there where Han shoots Greedo, and Greedo doesn't shoot first, but it's mostly just there to say, hey, this is what kind of character Han Solo is.
Yeah, I just kind of see it as like set pieces are action and vignettes are drama.
Yeah. I love your way with words, Lyle. maybe having that cold is that you like parse everything down. Because I think you just took everything Chris and I said and summed it up in what, about 10 words?
Yeah, I have a cold right now.
Yeah.
Actually, something that we should mention, something that we're going to try to do through GM Tools, is we're going to be taking a movie or a series of movies, that like a trilogy, and we're going to be using that as the example. We don't want to like refer to one of our games because a movie is something that will probably be quite a better example in that people have already seen it,
right,
and know what we're talking about, so you don't have to rely on us describing or accurately describing the scenes that we had in our stories. And we don't want to use classic modules or classic published adventures because we certainly don't want to spoil those for anybody by talking about the classic set pieces that are in the Ravenloft module, for example.
Where'd you get that example?
Yeah. So, yeah, so for this episode, we're going to be looking at the Star Wars trilogy.
If you couldn't tell already.
Well, it could have been Pulp Fiction.
This is true.
Use an example from that.
This is true. This is true.
But we're not going to talk about that anymore.
Ever again.
No. I would say that, at least for me, the Mos Eisley Cantina scene, that's a set piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're defining it as kind of this has to happen for the movie to continue, I guess I'm kind of jumping the shark by getting into why. But in my opinion, if that scene doesn't happen, you have no movie.
Actually, I would say that's a vignette, but I don't want to argue it.
Okay.
I think it's all drama.
Yeah, I don't think we should really parse between the two.
Fair enough. Okay, since I'm on nice solid ice, since no one's going to argue with me for the sake of expediency, the reason I kind of consider that a set piece is if you look at Star Wars A New Hope as a game a GM is running, kind of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Luke Skywalker, and the droids have to get off planet, and no matter what bar they were going to go into, I'm pretty sure the GM would have had the Han Solo character there for them to meet up with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter where they went, no matter what they did, they were going to encounter this character. Because without him, they don't really get off planet. And I suppose you could argue that they would just meet someone else to take him off planet, but...
And his name happens to be Han Solo.
Yeah. I think it would always be Han Solo, you know, if a GM was running that game, he'd be like, oh, so you go to bar number 2. Well, here's this other character, since you didn't like the first one.
He's got a green stripe down his pants.
Yeah, exactly. He's wearing green pants, and I'm just going to use these stats here and change the name. All right. And yeah, he has a big lizardy companion.
Yeah. His name
is
John Plural.
Nice. So, yeah, while there isn't a lot of action, I would probably consider that a set piece.
Mm-hmm. And I'd agree, because it definitely requires a bit of planning. You have to prepare that specific NPC beforehand. You'd probably want to set up some of the lines or information about him, like the Kessel Run in 5.2 parsecs, if I'm getting that right.
I guess I am going to have to disagree a little bit.
Okay. Pick that nit.
I don't think it's picking the nit at all.
It's just straight up disagreeing, because Wayne is wrong!
And we're going to try not to do this too often in the episode. But just the fact, I think it's a good example of how a dramatic scene, like just avoiding the set piece vignette for a moment, like how a dramatic scene is far more portable, or often more portable than an action scene that you've already kind of pre-established. Because like you said, all they need to do in the cantina, it has a couple good things going for it. It establishes a mood, atmosphere, like a little crazy, you know, I guess a dangerous place, although it's not that dangerous.
Hey, someone gets their arm cut off. All right, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
By the PCs.
But the only thing in the story is that they've just got to meet a character and then go to another scene. So I just think they can do that actually in any location.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So where I kind of saw it as this has to happen, the fact that, as you said, that scene is portable and could happen anywhere, so long as they conceivably meet the Han Solo character, I guess you consider it to not really be a set piece, whereas the trench run at the end of A New Hope, there's only one place that can happen.
Yeah, and I think there's the challenge, because if the players don't, or we were talking about the trash compactor as a set piece, it's very action-y, and that is a challenge, because whereas in the trench run, that's kind of where the whole story is going, and everything leads to that, so if the players don't stop the Death Star, then, you know, planets get blown up.
Right.
Whereas the trash compactor is just kind of like a set piece that you establish. You think, that's just really cool. It could be that you watch Star Wars. So you think, I want to use a scene like that, because I think that would be really tense. So, you know, move it to a fantasy setting, for example, and it's in, you know, the walls are closing in.
Right.
And you go, I want to get there. But what if they don't go into that room? Because it kind of, you can't just make any room the trash compactor.
Well, you could kind of have any room be like the crushing walls, but it's like, oh, come on, crushing walls again? This was somebody's freaking bedroom. Really?
Yeah.
Well, we're in the forest. Like, the trees are getting closer. So it is more limiting. Whereas another example would be the Luke, I'm your father scene mm-hmm. in The Empire Strikes Back. Spoiler. no, I didn't say who's the father.
Oh, yeah. Luke,
the scene
am not
takes place in the
father.
Hospital, and it's like the paternity test comes in.
Yeah.
There's a sweating Obi-Wan.
Yes. Father, I am.
Well, I was just imagining Darth Vader doing this little, yes, not the father dance.
Not the dada.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
But in a sense, there's, it's actually both things, because you think, I want to have a really cool set piece where they fight with lightsabers, and I want this like, tower, this huge shaft, and they can fall off, you know. And
mm-hmm.
They're on like a really narrow confine.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but I also want that to be the big reveal. So that's kind of the dramatic scene. Mm-hmm. But let's say the character is actually smart, and it's like, all right, you see Darth Vader, and he's got a lightsaber, and you're like, okay, I'm out of there.
And you're like, oh, come on, you're playing a hero, come on.
You know,
and it's like, oh, is there a shaft? Okay, I just jumped down it. I don't care. probably safer. And you're like, as a game master, you don't really want to punish the player for doing something smart, like not face the major villain.
Right.
And the major villain, you knew you were not going to let die anyway because you wanted that person to come back in the next few adventures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but you've got the I'm your father thing. So you're like, that's the real big thing I want to do is I want to do that big reveal. But he's just run away from the action scene that I've tied it to. And I think you can then divorce that and separate that dramatic scene and do it another way. I mean, you could have it as the guy escapes, but then, Darth Vader's on the line. What?
Yeah. I hang up. Oh, come on, dude.
Yeah. He calls back.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very good point of how you can use both of them in conjunction, because you're absolutely right. You can take the I Am Your Father scene and really play that out anywhere. But yeah, tying it to a set piece makes it much more dramatic and much more impactful, but as you're highlighting, also more difficult to steer the players towards.
Well, actually, I'd say that scene in itself is a bit of a set piece in that it's really hard to put together. I mean, you think about the scene. Darth Vader has to beat the guy. I suppose you can make him a big enough and strong enough big bad evil guy. And that works in a D&D type game where, you know, the enemies can just way outclass you by level. But, you know, other games you have the chance of lucky dice or things. I mean, they set it up where the guy fails but doesn't feel like you've cheated him as the GM. That's just hard to do.
Yeah, but that's also, I mean, this is getting into a whole other topic here, but I think that's also a case where the GM, so long as they're not rolling out in the open, has the opportunity to say to themselves, wow, that's really going to screw up the narrative. Mm-hmm. And even though the dice roll is saying one thing, it really kind of messes up. Now, I hesitate to say mess up the story, because I'm not really a big fan of pre-planning out the story, because why then are you playing? But
right. I hear what you're saying.
In certain situations, you need to, my feeling is you need to ignore dice rolls because it makes things more dramatic. Ooh. And that would be one of those cases where I guess it is kind of railroady a little bit, as you said, Chris, where the GM says, okay, no way in heck is Luke Skywalker going to beat Darth Vader in this encounter.
Mm-hmm.
You've kind of already pre-established the outcome of this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, there's all kinds of other stuff you can do with it. Like Lyle said, there is still that, I don't know, arguably the point of that meeting is not the fight.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah, it's not arguable at all. I think that's definitely true.
Yeah, it's the reveal of, you know, Luke's parentage, and the two of them are really just kind of testing each other to see what the other person is made of. And I've kind of gone off track. But,
mm-hmm. Well, no, yeah, but I think you bring up a valid point. I think an important part of building up these set pieces is that as you create them, you kind of break them down into their specific pieces, you know. What is it that you really want to accomplish here? Do you want to have a cool lightsaber fight? Do you want to have a guy with a, I don't know, some kind of skill challenge where he's hanging off a line? Or do you want to have a big dramatic reveal? And if you're lucky, you can get all three together. But if you're not, which one do you need to keep? Which one do you need to dump? And how do you bring those about?
Right.
That's a good point. And then also just, when developing whether or not it's a vignette or a set piece, is ask yourself, how mobile is that action scene or dramatic scene?
Yeah, because when you come down to it, I mean, that I'm your father reveal, you can't really put it anywhere. It wouldn't work in a cantina or something like that. But
I mean,
it is more mobile than, say, the shaft.
Yeah. I mean, you could kind of put that anywhere. It just wouldn't have the impact, you know.
Again, the forest. What's this huge chef doing here?
Yeah, and it also saves you some frustration. And like you said, Chris, is like finding out which ones you actually think, which ones are the most important to you and ranking those. And then, mm-hmm. of course, then adding which ones are the most mobile. Because then what you can do is you're going to make some sacrifices because you want the players to have a good time. They start veering away from the shaft. Mm-hmm. But if that's number three on your list of the cool things about that set piece, then, you know, you can have a lightsaber fight somewhere else.
Yep.
You can have the reveal somewhere else. You don't have to necessarily force those. Like, oh, all the doors are now closed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to turn back. Yes.
Why? What's this railroad?
No, I was going to say.
Why do you even ask the question? What do you do?
To do with certain systems or in certain situations. But in addition to you, the GM, ranking the ones you think are most important, I would try and figure out which would be most important to your players, because then that would, not guarantee, but that would at least hopefully give you some idea mm-hmm. of which ones they would go for. You know, so rather than sitting there at the table going, oh man, so they turned left when I thought they were going to turn right, and now we don't have trash compactor, we don't have, you know, them battling on the top of this big shaft, we only have these things left. If you try and rank it what you think your players would do, possibly by asking leading questions or just like establishing fiction, then I think you have a better chance of not having to cross off or move a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's another piece of advice is to keep your set piece liquid. You know, allow it to change form according to what the players are doing. You know, if they fly away from Cloud City, then you're not going to have any kind of shaft there. So figure some way to work around it. Think something that might be more interesting, like on a mountaintop or something.
Well, then they just magically appear at Cloud Metropolis, which has a very similar reactor core, and Darth Vader just happens to be there too. Oh.
Maybe you're setting up Cloud City as pretty special.
Well, actually, right. They kind of did, because they went through, right? They're looking on the nav computer, and they're like, oh, gee, the only system that's within distance is, hey, this one, Cloud City. That's the GM saying, you're going there. Come hell or high water, you are going there, because well, that's the only one on the nav computer.
That's not that big a deal. I mean, you can, that kind of place is pretty portable. You might need to redraw a map or something, but the Empire doesn't show up until after everybody lands, so that's fine. Darth Vader shows up afterwards. So assuming we're going to take that set piece, the I Am Your Father scene, what kind of preparation would we need to do for it? And what kind of things would we need to set up in order to make that scene happen?
Well, it depends on like how prop heavy you are as a game master. That's one thing. Is this the first mm-hmm. scene that you've thought of for the adventure? So then, I mean, that depends on whether or not then you now have to backtrack and think of the scenes that lead up to that. Not necessarily every one, but the different plot mm-hmm. points that are going to help get the players there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like getting them to Cloud City, having the Empire show up, getting everybody captured and all set to try and escape.
Well, and I'm not going to say this is like the most important thing, but it's not even necessarily a scene. It's more of background. You also kind of have to set up that Darth Vader is a really big, bad, evil guy.
Absolutely, yeah. And especially, like I was saying before, if you make it to where Luke is definitely going to lose the battle, then I think it's kind of unfair to spring that on the players right away. So you really should establish that he is a badass.
No, I mean, that's a really good point, and it is something that you wouldn't want to overlook. Yeah, if you have an emotional payoff, there has to be something to trigger that.
The emotional investment?
Yeah. I mean, it's like random mm-hmm. guy saying, I'm your father. And you're like, ah, yeah, okay. It's kind of have to establish that he is the villain. Or...
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully, if you're already at this point in the campaign, that you've already played through The New Hope, so you've seen him cut down Obi-Wan.
Well, doesn't that go into prep? Like, if that's the scene you're going to do, hey, let me create some NPCs that the characters will fall in love with, or at least come to rely on. Oh, and then this guy can cut him down.
Yeah, exactly. And you can play that as a background vignette. Yeah.
You also have to establish the just the concept of fatherhood, like that. A lot of players don't
have fathers.
Create a family tree.
Really mm-hmm. care about other characters at all?
Right. So you got to like create like a make it somehow important that like the identity of the father is important, or who the father was, or they actually have somebody else that is their father, or they think is their father.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to play a role. You were talking earlier today, Wayne, about a movie where somebody was revealed to be the last in their line.
Oh, that's right. And I guess won't give away the name because, yeah, don't want to spoil the movie, even though it wasn't that good to begin with. But Yeah, it felt like this prophecy was just kind of tacked on, you know, about like, I guess the beginning third of the movie, you know, that you find out, oh, this person is the last bloodline, you know, of this whatever royal family, and, you know, the big bad evil guy needs to use her in the sacrifice to activate this artifact that he's searching for. And that was the first time we, as the audience, had been introduced to that, and I just didn't really care. So I'm like, you didn't establish that. You didn't establish that there was this line of ancient people that this princess is now the last of. So it just feels like you're tacking it on, and it's kind of lame. So, yeah, I think that's something you would have to watch out for in setting this up. Like, as you said, Lyle, if this kind of nobody walks up, or if they've only been exposed to the Darth Vader character like once or twice, and then you spring the I am your father on them, well, they're going to be kind of like, ah, you know what? That feels kind of shoehorned in. So what? It doesn't really mean anything.
Well, even if you had established Darth Vader as a villain, and then, you know, you play one and you bring him back. You know, I thought I killed him in the Death Star trench run, but you bring him back. But you're like, well, he's a good villain. And he's like, I'm your father. You'd be like, oh, come on. Who cares? Like, what?
It says right here on my character sheet who my father is. Right there. Yeah.
The worst thing is it doesn't say anything. They're just like, yeah. Okay, now you're just throwing some random thing in just because.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something that's always important to do. When you create these set pieces and these vignettes, you don't want to create them in a vacuum. I mean, get the information from your player. Look at their backstories. Find out what they as a character have decided to care about. And then build it off of those. Unless it's just really, really cool, and then you can just go with it.
Or reverse engineer it. And you know in your head, you say, I really want to do this set piece because I think it would be awesome. Mm-hmm. And so when you have players build their characters, say, I need you to build these types of characters. You don't necessarily have to tell them why, but if you do that, rather than going in and saying, hey, build whatever you want, and then trying to figure out, yeah, how to shoehorn them into your awesome set piece that you've set up,
mm-hmm.
either build it from the characters' backstories, or try and get the characters or the players to create characters that would logically fit into the set piece you have designed, or at least the idea you have for it.
Right. No, it's good. I mean, it's the difference between, Luke, I'm your father, and Lando Calrissian appearing and going, oh, you know, I used to own that.
Right.
And in the movie, you're like, oh, okay. It's not important.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, you can drop that in. But with Luke, I'm your father, no, that has to mean something.
Absolutely.
I just have this really funny image in my head. Imagine if you kind of, like, reverse the reactions somehow. And Lando Calrissian walks up and is like, oh, I used to own that. And the reaction is, no!
No!
You know? And then it's like... And then it's like, oh, Luke, I'm your father. Oh, all right.
Yeah, he's Darth Vader walking up to Han Solo. What have you been doing with my son? Oh, that's his father? Yeah. Forgot to mention it.
Yeah.
You know, chip off the old block, right?
I just thinking it's like the, you're dropping in the Return of the Jedi, like, oh, that's my sister. Like, what? didn't we have that? Yeah, didn't we have that kissing scene? Like,
dude, we've already made out like twice.
Another thing you want to take a look at when you're planning out set pieces is contingencies. What do you do if the players do turn away? They decide not to fight Darth Vader, or they figure out a way to get around that scene. What do you do?
Yeah. I mean, you just kind of like, hey, as we said, you kind of open another door, and hey, there's another reactor room that looks exactly like this one. But
how many shafts does this place have?
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely a good point, and that will definitely depend on what your set piece is. You know, it shouldn't, I guess sometimes it can be heavy-handed, what you do, but generally I would try and at least make it look like the players chose to get there.
Yeah.
Kind of like the illusion of free choice. But, like, in addition to setting up all that backstory and the scenes that have to come before the set piece, like, I guess it does kind of make sense that you would have to plan a lot more for a set piece, because just kind of thinking about it, me as a GM, like, I would want to make sure I had all, I guess for lack of a better term, my mechanical ducks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, thinking of the Death Star trench run. Okay, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on, and I'm going to want to have the piloting modifiers right there at my fingertips for when the players try and do stuff that I can just tell them almost immediately what they need to roll or what they need to do. Or, again, using the Luke, I am your father scene, okay, what are all the mechanical bonuses or penalties, or what are all the weird edge case rules that are going to crop up for this fight where Darth Vader is chucking random space junk mm-hmm. at Luke and doing all that other stuff. So, yeah, I'm totally buying into the idea that an RPG set piece does require a lot of planning, similar to a movie.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to bring up that same point about you, that you just need to know the mechanics well, like the trench line. You need to read the piloting and ship rules really well, or buy a copy of X-Wing to just play there with the players. But yeah, with the Luke, I Am Your Father scene, the lightsaber battle specifically, I think it's really important to have the mechanics of the big bad down to a T, and yeah. also to work in some special bits for them. I mean, players are so ingenious when it comes to figuring out how to kill something. I mean, they are murder hobos after all. So oftentimes you'll need to build in some escape plan for the villain or some kind of special power that can keep them alive if you need them for a set piece at some point. Although that is kind of cheating a little bit, so it's up to you whether or not you want to do that. But you can't just bring it up out of nowhere, too. You know, if he's got this teleport skill, let the players know about it somehow beforehand so that it doesn't look like a deus ex machina and the player's just, oh, come on, what is this?
Yeah, you said it already. I was going to say somehow telegraph the capabilities of the person they're going up against or mm-hmm. telegraph the situation they're going to be getting themselves into. So when you do pull out those weird moves to kind of show how difficult this situation is or, you know, just kind of the things that are going on, the players won't go, oh, come on.
Exactly.
That's bogus. You're just doing that so we lose.
You know, I was just thinking that when we were talking about, like, just the lightsaber rules and that. Because let's say Luke does kill Darth Vader before he does the line. And just be prepared for that and think, he's like, what's going to be the cool thing? The dying breath, oh, I'm your father, die. Or he dies without saying it. And then someone else, you know, perhaps could be cool. Then someone else is like, Luke, that was your father.
No! Luke, that was your father.
Yeah, all you do is you just need to change the tense of that sentence.
Yeah.
But think about have a couple, like, backup plans, contingency plans, Chris said. Yeah, if you're going to have a fight, I mean, there always should be the potential that somebody should die, or somebody could die. Mm-hmm. It could be the PCs, it could be the NPC.
Right.
Yeah. And you don't want to throw it either. I mean, you want, in order for the fight to feel meaningful, it has to have some element of danger to it. If the players know that that the guy's going to stop at the end, or if somehow he's holding back and the dice only doing minimal damage or something, then they might not take the fight very seriously, and it might not feel dramatic, which is the opposite of what you want for a big dramatic scene.
Yeah, exactly.
So think of, okay, he dies before he says it. What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Do I want to bring that up somehow, and then how you do that? Or is it just, okay, with that kind of plot line or dramatic vignette, that's gone.
Zombie Vader.
Zombify a robot?
But yeah, exactly. Just try and envision, you know your players best, so try and envision what you think they're going to do when they reach these situations and try and plan for it.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, kind of similar to what Lyle said, is at least, because I find it almost impossible to anticipate what players are going to do, so I've kind of given up even trying. But instead, I just try to think, okay, what are the ways this situation could end? Like, not even necessarily what the players will do, just how will this thing end? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, okay, again, to use the Luke, I Am Your Father scene, it's a fight. One of those two guys is either going to die, or somebody's going to break and run. Those are probably the outcomes that's going to, you know, result from that situation. And so just, yeah, think about what happens with each of those outcomes and plan for it.
Absolutely.
You want to avoid the scene where the Emperor says, the fully operational Death Star. And you're like, you kidding me? It's only half built. What? What do you mean? How is it fully operational? Now, in the movie, you might go, oh, how clever. But in the game, the players are going to go, the BS card, you know, BS.
Did the Emperor just throw it?
Again, I think that'd be a really funny scene in the movie. You know, now witness the power of this operational, and Luke's like, sorry, operational? Yeah, no. So, again, speaking of kind of consequences, the reason I might disagree that the Rancor fight is a set piece, Chris, is because, at least in my opinion, the only thing that has to come out of that scene is Luke gets captured. Mm-hmm. Or Luke allows himself to be captured.
Okay.
In my opinion, like, it didn't really matter how that happened. Mm-hmm. The important part was that everybody was then there in Jabba's palace to, you know, to perform the rescue for Han Solo. Mm-hmm. So it could have been one-on-one combat with, like, a Gamorrean guard. It could have been the Rancor fight. It could have been that weird chess game between him and Jabba. Again, or even another bounty hunter could have brought him in, mm-hmm. you know, in chains. to me, the important part of that scene was he now looks like he's a prisoner and Jabba thinks he has him. Didn't really matter how that happened, though.
Yeah, I apologize because I know you really wanted to disagree with me, but sorry, I think you're right.
No!
it's a set piece as far as the movie is concerned because it did take a lot of work and money to be created, but in a game, it's nothing more than a cool big fight scene.
But I guess it could be a set piece. It's something that the Game Master wants to do. It's got a lot of action that they think is really fun, but it's definitely one of those ones when you do the how important is this to the story, how mobile is this, and they're probably going to score pretty low on both accounts.
Right, okay.
And you think, what is important about that scene? And you think, well, the only thing that's important about it is somehow it's connected to Luke being captured, which can be done a myriad of ways. So if, you know, suddenly the pit opens up and the player goes,
my dex roll, take that.
And he makes the roll, then you're like, all right, cool, all right. And you see a giant monster, and then they're like, wow, well, that's good. I mean, maybe show them the monster. It's like, well, you survived
this. Claw comes out and grabs one of the dancers or something.
Something like that, yeah. And then the player then can feel like a little bit of, they can kind of really see what the reward was in making that roll. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, that really mattered. At least for that character, is that they potentially survived death. And to you, it doesn't matter anymore because you're not going to do that amazing scene. So now you just got to figure it another way for the player to get captured.
And then you get bitter because the player robbed you of that amazing scene. So as they land, you just have one of the band members crack him over the head with an electric flute, and he gets knocked out. There you go. You're like, congratulations on your successful dex roll. You're not knocked out. What? Oh, come on.
Yeah. you know what I think about, you know, set pieces in a published adventure that you think are cool versus set pieces that you've made for your own adventure? I think you'd be more inclined to try to force the ones in your own adventure because you spend so much time, you know, planning them.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas in a published adventure, it's cool, but you actually didn't spend any more time on that particular piece than you may have with other ones, other than perhaps learning rules, which is never lost, or reviewing rules. So what I'm trying to say is, if, you know, if you're doing a set piece that you've planned, sometimes you just got to let it go. That will be much more rewarding. Forcing somebody to do that thing just because you spent hours working on it does not mean that they're going to find it enjoyable.
Exactly. Slowly fold up the notes you made, wipe your tears with it, and put it in the trash.
Nice. Nice roll, Luke.
Well done.
Now, speaking of kind of like something that's canned, like a published adventure versus something that you create on the fly or you create on your own, one thing that we kind of tied to this episode, and it's, the link might be somewhat tenuous, but we do see some parallels. But that's the idea of box text.
Just so you know, I might disagree a little on the definition there. I'm thinking more with just descriptors on it, but I won't make a big.
All right. Well, I'm gonna preempt that.
Yeah, just go with it. Yeah.
So Chris, what do you think the box text is?
Well, for me, box text is basically just a description of the area and situation so that the scene has the setup that it requires for the set piece. And that's it. I mean, for example, if we're going to be doing the one that we've been working on all episode with the I Am Your Father scene, you'd describe the shaft, how it looks, maybe give some atmosphere about the howling wind coming out of the shaft, and then you see Darth Vader. If you haven't described him thoroughly before, then do so now. And then his lightsaber expands out. Yeah, something along those lines.
All right, well, that makes sense. But Wayne, you're not a big fan of box text.
Yeah, and knowing we were going to do this episode and thinking about what my problem with box text is, I guess I have no problem when box text is only a description, as Chris said. Where I have a problem with box text is when the text explains what a character would feel or things that wouldn't be immediately obvious to them, you know? So, like, again, using the standard example that we're going with all episode, descriptions of how the area looked, how Darth Vader looked, and, you know, how his lightsaber sounds as he steps into the room, that would all be fine for a box text for me. Where I've seen box text that I really didn't like is then they go on to use things like, you know, you are stunned by how menacing he looks, or, you know, you feel sick as you look over the edge of this endless shaft. You know, you're paralyzed with fear. That's where I tend to think that box text, well, I disagree with what it does, because my opinion, the character and the player should determine for themselves how they react to this thing, rather than being told by box text.
So I just realized, you really don't mind box text, you just dislike bad box text.
Okay, that's, I guess it's a, that, I guess it's a fair thing to say. And maybe I felt more vehemently, you know, against box text because I've been reading so many old, like, AD&D first and second edition modules. And in my opinion, there seemed to be a lot of stuff that, that forced emotion on the character.
Okay, fair enough. So you can say, in the box text, you can say it's cold.
Right.
But you can't say a chill runs through your spine.
That one's kind of gray for me because, you know, a chill runs down your spine. I think everybody kind of experiences that. But again, like, I guess strong language, right? You know, that it's so cold, you can't move.
What if they say this is the, where they kind of like assume a history? And they say you've never seen anything this horrible before. You've never seen anyone this large before, or something like that. You've never seen a scene this grotesque.
I guess I have less of a problem with that, because to me that doesn't, you're not telling the character how to feel, it's just a way of describing the scene where everybody kind of knows it's epic, you know. I realize I sound like I'm contradicting myself, but I have no problem with box text that says, you know, you haven't seen something this big before, as opposed to, you know, you cower in fear at the sight of this monstrous whatever. You know?
So as long as that's not forcing an emotion or an action on the players.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. And it is kind of, it can be an easy trap that you can fall into. An example I saw online of a box text that accidentally went bad was one where it was a description where you walk into a 10x10 room and there's a statue in the center of a man holding a sword and it feels warm to the touch. To which a player asked the GM, example, wait, who touched the statue? So you do have to be careful about how much description you put in there because it might be taking it too far.
No, I agree. That is where I would have a problem with box text. But as we were discussing before the episode, perhaps it's just, you know, I'm blowing this out of proportion and most box text doesn't do that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. So box text is easy to understand in the context of a published adventure. It is the description in the box.
Right.
Which was like an old standard, so people understand that. But when you're doing your own adventure, where does box text come in there?
That's a good question. Actually, I wanted to ask you guys about it. When you're making your own, what counts as box text for you? Like, if you just put down a couple of points that you want to make sure that you convey when the players are in the scene and then wing it from there, it's not really in a box. Does that count? And beyond that, then, if you pre-write something, like hand it over as a note, or even for that matter, if you print up a picture of a NPC, does that count?
Yeah. That would be box text, in my opinion. Hmm. If you pre-write something.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say.
Or write something. Obviously not writing it as you were describing it. Oh, this is good stuff. Yeah. Let me just get this down as I say it.
You guys take notes. There'll be a quiz later.
Damn.
My feeling is like if I did something like bullet points of important information that I wanted to convey during a scene, but sort of the exact thing I said to convey it, I was just going to ad-lib. I wouldn't consider that box text. But yeah, again, if writing out my notes of how I, or the plan for the session, if I write down something that I intend to read verbatim, then that's box text. So for me, it's exactly the same whether it's kind of like a published module or something I did up myself. If it's text that's meant to be read exactly as presented, then I consider it box text.
So I guess relating it to some of the set pieces or vignettes that we're talking about in Star Wars, I mean, that shaft means nothing unless you really have a good description of how cold it is or how long it goes down.
Right.
And thinking of stuff on the fly can be quite difficult.
Yes,
true.
Or if you have something that requires a mood, I probably did more box texting for the hard-boiled game than any other game in that because it was so reliant on the language.
Mm-hmm.
The language the players used, the language that the NPCs used, to kind of ground them in an early 1960s hard-boiled environment, that I wanted to make sure that certain descriptions went a certain way, and I tried to copy James Ellroy's writing style in the descriptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought of that actually as an example too. It's hard to translate into movies, because movies can show visually what they are, whereas you have to describe it vocally with a game. I always find it hard, though. I always get self-conscious just, like, reading out a block of text that I've pre-prepared. I was, like, winging it with some bullet points instead.
Yeah, I generally do, too. But then I'm also kind of worried, like, if you are setting up, like, this big set piece, sometimes there is information that is vital to the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, as a GM, you're often juggling three or four different things going on all at the same time. So sometimes it's easy to forget to mention stuff. So that's why sometimes in those set pieces, I will write out box text just so that I know I haven't forgotten to mention something important. Because the worst thing is, like, you mentioned, oh yeah, and so you fall over the railing, and yeah, you're going to fall a long way because this thing is like a mile beneath you, and the player goes, whoa, hold on, where did this thing become a shaft? And you're like, oh, did I forget to mention that you're battling out on, like, the middle of nothing? And they're like, yeah, you did. I'm like, oh, all right, sorry, well.
Yeah, I mean, well, think about walking into the cantina, and it goes from you walk into a bar
right.
to the kind of scene and the kind of way that established what Star Wars was
mm-hmm.
to a lot of people.
Guys in rubber suits.
Dancing with clarinets.
That then get replaced by crappy CG.
Yeah. But with Wayne, you got to be careful, though, because you see this. Whoa, who said I was seeing?
Was I looking that direction?
Yeah. Who says my eyes are open?
Hey, I wasn't looking that direction. My eyes were closed, buddy.
Who said I was looking at anything? Yeah, describe what's that. Was that my feet? Because that's what I'm looking at. All right. Thanks. Thanks for playing, Wayne.
Yeah.
I guess advice for writing box text is I usually try and keep it short and snappy and to the point. Because, like, I don't want some guy to drone on for 5 or 10 minutes describing this scene as I have to sit there and listen to him.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. Nobody came to play to listen to your novels, so exactly. But, you know, if you're trying to build a mood, too, then feel, you know, go. You can put some, I don't know if a better word for it, but some flower language in there to try and get it, to get a mood established. But, again, it's a game, not a novel.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, it's sometimes those opening scenes are so important.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, it's like a book, you know.
Yeah.
People remember how it begins, and people remember how it ends. And there's a lot of, like, stuff in the second act that they'll forget. So it'd be more forgiving. So make sure that last scene is a blockbuster, and make sure that first scene really establishes what kind of game you want everyone to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm also a lot more lenient at the beginning of a session, because to me, that is the time to establish what the tone and feel of the game is going to be. And yeah, as Lyle said, you often do use prepared text or box text to get that across. So I have no problem with it kind of being at the beginning. So I know, okay, this is the kind of game we're playing. Well, this is kind of what the tone of the game is. But then after that, yeah, I would say try and keep it short. So really, what I think we're saying is your game should only be a beginning and an end.
Pretty much. Just like all those other days.
Yeah. All right. So the first session. Yeah, oh, that was totally awesome. Yeah. And the last session. Oh, yeah, that was awesome. You know, what happened in the middle? Doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter.
And this time a white dragon. All right, well, that wraps up episode 99, and hopefully the first of a few GM tools. For episode 100, we're thinking about doing, you know, like something special where I guess we rehash the last 50 episodes or something like that. But we did that in episode 50. So what we decided to do was just pick something that we think is pretty cool, but definitely that you can use in your games, and hopefully that you'll find very interesting. So it won't necessarily be longer than any other of the episodes, only if it's worth it.
Because we never run over just talking about crap.
Right.
So tune in for episode 100. We think it's going to be a really good episode, and it's certainly a topic we're really excited about.
Should be fun.
Yeah. All
right, well, thank you for joining us again on IdleRedHands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the webpage, or stream them through Stitcher or iTunes, or download them off of DriveThruRPG. You can post comments right there on the website, or join us in the forums, or you can follow us on Twitter, or post up in Facebook, like the page there, or just send us an email, because we're always happy to hear from you. Thank you very much, and see you next time.
Bye.
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 DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs. We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.